taking a step closer. She wasn't very intimidating, small as she was. Not many spoke to him the way she did.
"Why should I? I don't know you. I barely know your mother."
"Because..." Her voice wavered. "Because I'll pay you."
"You lost your luggage. How many volts could you possibly have on you right now?"
His eyes travelled from her purse to her pockets. He doubted she had more than a few hundred. But that was a few hundred closer to his 10,000. Maybe he was feeling a bit altruistic after all. "Lords has a bank account," En said, with the kind of seriousness that made Levi think she wasn't lying. He searched her face for a tell. Everyone always had a tell, a break in their poker face. But he found none.
"It has more volts than you could want," she continued. "If you help me find her, I'll pay you."
"How much?" he asked.
5,000 volts, she said unflinchingly.
He stilled. Did she really have that kind of voltage? She did look like she came from money, as lords always had too. Maybe she had 5,000 volts. Maybe she had more.
"Sorry," he said, faking disinterest. "I don't have time for this. I'm not the sort of guy who helps damsels in distress."
10,000 volts, she declared.
"Gotcha." He narrowed his eyes, as if considering. He let a few moments pass, and as he waited, the boldness in her dark eyes never faded. A few minutes ago she'd been in tears, but she wasn't broken. But would she be, once she realized her mother was probably dead?
"Maybe Alfero is still alive," Levi thought.
After all, she'd survived this long. That alone was impressive. But unlikely. And a good player knew better than to bet against those kind of odds.
"I'm listening," he said. "But I'm going to need some incentive up front. Who knows how long it could take to find her?"
"I'll give you 1,000 volts," she offered. "But not until the end of the day. You said yourself that you barely know lords. I want to make sure you can help me at all."
If he pressed her for more, she'd probably relent. After all, she could play at being brave all she wanted, but Levi knew better. She left her belongings behind to follow Chez straight into the heart of the North Side. She was desperate. But he didn't haggle. He didn't want to scare her away and lose the possibility, even if it was slim, for 10,000 volts, for a chance to save himself. After all, he was desperate too. If the day ended without a lead, then Levi would take his 1,000 volts tonight and leave her in the dust. Even if 10,000 would cover his entire debt to Cedric, he still doubted that Lord Zalfero was even alive. He couldn't afford to waste time on a pointless search.
"We'll start with a friend of mine," Levi said. "He can answer our questions."
En's shoulders relaxed, and she let out the breath she'd been holding.
"Is your friend an... iron?" she asked.
He smirked. "What? Don't like my friends much."
Jack might look threatening, but he had all the aggression of a baby rabbit. Mansi was practically Levi's younger sister, and Chez... well, Chez and Levi weren't on the best of terms as of late. But when Chez wanted to, he could be tolerable. Sometimes, when the stars aligned, even pleasant.
"No, my friend's not an iron," he said.
But Levi got the feeling En would be missing Old Town's charm within the hour.
"Good," she huffed.
He opened the door for her.
"After you, missy."
"But what about the white boots?" she asked. "They could still be searching for me."
"You think I'd go someplace with white boots? Please, I know better than that. You should learn to trust me."
His smile was filthy with insincerity.
"I'll work with you because I have to, but I'm not going to trust you until I find lords."
She lifted her head and marched outside.
1,000 volts, Levi grumbled to himself.
If he could tolerate her for a single day, then he would wake up 1,000 volts richer tomorrow. Besides, N. Salter wouldn't last more than a night in the City of Sin. Levi. Levi and N emerged from the edge of Old Town, squinting into the light. Not the sunlight. The new rain sky was overcast, the smog leaving foul smudges against the clouds. No, they were squinting at the flashing lights of Trop Street, the center of the casino district, and, as far as anyone on the north side was concerned, the center of the city. Everything shone on Trop Street, the glint of costume jewelry, the golden teeth of the bouncer's smiles, the waxy sheen of faux leather, and of course the neon reflections in the puddles of rainwater, piss, and emptied liquor cups along the sidewalks. There was nothing like the casino district. From the moment Levi had arrived in New Rains, he'd made it his home. Then he'd made it his territory. One day, he would make it his kingdom. To the right, a man played an accordion along the curb. He sang about the woes of unrequited love. But it wasn't clear if he was referring to a sweetheart or the bottle of absinthe at his feet. N cringed each time the singer cursed.
"You seem nervous," Levi said.
She hugged her arms to her chest and darted an anxious glance over her shoulder. "This street is so crowded, but it's not even noon. Don't these people work?" He snorted.
"Crowded? You should see this street at night."
Half a block ahead, a man in a trench coat stared at them from beneath a dull and flickering yellow sign. Rusted chains dangled from it like metal streamers. The man's face was sallow and sunken, and he reached a shaking hand forward like a prisoner trapped behind bars, begging for food or vaults. N stiffened and knocked into Levi's shoulder, piquing his annoyance.
"Why is he watching us?" N whispered.
"He's a street slave. Don't worry, he can't follow us."
"What does that mean? What's stopping him?"
She ducked to his other side so that Levi was between her and the man.
"He's trapped on that street," Levi explained. "The families there have a talent that binds people in debt to them within a certain area. That street is like a jail cell."
She shivered. "What are they in debt for?"
"Drugs. Mostly Rapture, Mistress, and Lullaby. All from Torin and Augustine suppliers. Try to avoid Chain Street."
She nodded fearfully and fiddled with something in her pocket. If Levi didn't know better, he'd guess she was an antsy runner carrying an expensive package. The farther west they walked down Trop Street, the closer they came to Scarhand territory. Even if it wasn't peak hours, there were probably still a few gangsters roaming the alleys, hunting for orb pouches or, for the particularly skilled, grazing trace vaults off unlucky passers-by's skin. N was marking herself as a target. Then, to Levi's ever-increasing aggravation, N removed her coin from her pocket and began fiddling with it as she walked. He glanced at the cameo of the Queen on the front. If it was from before the Revolution, it was probably worth more than sentimental value. All the more reason to avoid wandering eyes.
"Put the coin back," he snapped. "That looks like gold from far away."
This missy was bound to be more trouble than she was worth. He didn't have the time or patience to teach her the rules of New Rains. N bit her lip and slipped it back into her pocket. At least she listened to what he said.
"What's the coin from, anyway?" he asked.
"It's an old token. Lords gave it to me."
"She's alone and agitated," Levi reminded himself.
Of course she was acting jumpy. What she needed was a distraction.
"So just how different is New Rains from Bellamy?" he asked, even though he already knew the answer. Completely.
"Well, to start with, it's a lot dirtier," she said, her nose crinkled. Levi was beginning to think that was her signature look. "And it smells foul."
"What? The city?"
He inhaled deeply through his nose.
"That's the smell of opportunity. And maybe a little piss."
"Yes, well, I suppose you might be fonder of it if you were born here."
"You can't tell from looking at me, but I wasn't born a sinner," he said. "But yes, I am rather fond of the old New Rains. Maybe you will be too after a while."
She crinkled her nose again, Pretty or not, Levi wondered if he had ever met such a delicate, unpleasant creature.
Where are you from, then? She asked.
My family lives in Elta.
The word felt like a shard of ice on his tongue. It was a city a few hours east, on the opposite coast.
Before that, my parents came from Curico.
Curico was once a great capital of one of the seven Miser kingdoms. During the revolution, like many Orbmaker families who'd been loyal to the Misers, the Glaziers were forced to relocate near the ever-suspicious eyes of New Rains, the capital of the Republic. His mother, who'd been a bit of a world traveller in her youth, hadn't resented the move. His father, however, had mourned the loss of his home and the king he'd once served. Rather than teach Levi about Curico, his father had refused to discuss it, as if the city itself was gone, left in an unspeakable state of grief. He considered himself a martyr.
How long have you lived in New Rains? Anne asked, bringing Levi's focus back to the present.
Since I was 12.
Levi had fled the brutality of his home, seeking the brutality of somewhere else, a place where, this time, he could fight back. Frowning, he shook away the unpleasant memories. In less than a minute, she'd managed to steer the conversation entirely away from herself. He didn't like it when people didn't talk about themselves. In his experience, that usually meant they had something to hide.
You're full of questions, aren't you? He commented.
You're a stranger leading me through an unsightly area in an unseemly city. Of course I'm full of questions.
He supposed that was a reasonable response, though he'd hardly call his own territory unsightly. Someone cooed to their right.
Welcome to Sweetie Street, he said,
not bothering to hide his grin. He could think of no better place to watch N squirm. Swarms of people stumbled down the alley, all flushed and in some degree of hungover stupor. The women dressed in dark skirts with lacy tulles, lipstick every shade of red, faces white or pink with powder. The men wore black and white striped suits, with jewel-studded pipes resting suggestively between their lips. At night, the dancing silhouettes in the windows beckoned customers from all across the city with promises of warm beds and warmer embraces.
Whatever you do, he whispered in N's ear. Don't look anyone in the eyes.
Why not?
She asked, jerking her gaze from the window displays to the ground, which was covered with broken glass and sparkly confetti.
Their talent is seduction.
He swore he saw goosebumps prickle against her skin, and he fought to contain his laughter.
You can't let them get too close either. One touch.
He squeezed her shoulder.
And even you would be discarding your skirts and stockings. One kiss, and you'd be overcome by an almost primal sort of lust.
N narrowed her eyes like she'd realized he was mucking with her. But then a woman giggled to their right, and N jolted as if she'd heard a gunshot. The woman swayed back and forth, wearing only a ruby corset covered in black lace, her glitter-covered chest spilling out the front. The number 10 was written across her cleavage in violet lipstick.
Oh, goodness!
N gasped, her gaze darting wildly between the cobblestones and the woman's breasts.
What does the number mean?
Price.
The whimper that escaped her lips was enough to send Levi into hysterics. He laughed so hard he needed to clutch his abdomen to steady himself.
Oh, I'm glad you find my decency so amusing, she snapped. So is Sweetie Street frequented by everyone in the City of Sin? Is this where you come every night after whatever illegal things you do?
Me? I don't need to come here, he said.
Only somewhat in earnest, but mostly because he couldn't help himself. His cockiness earned him a disgusted but embarrassed look from N.
Think of it this way, he said. When you go back to Bellamy, you'll be able to scandalize all your uppity friends.
N laughed hollowly.
As if I need them thinking any less of me.
Less of you? Are you not snobbish enough for their preferences?
She rolled her eyes.
I'm a Salter. There are much better, richer families at my finishing school, with more impressive dancing talents. No one notices me. Most of the time they hardly acknowledge I'm there.
Must have hit a nerve, Levi thought.
That was the most she'd said about herself yet.
It also struck him as rather unbelievable. Her doll-like features, her determined dark eyes. How could anyone not notice her?
Then why go back there? He asked.
Because I have only a year left of school before my debut. It's why I'd really love to be able to return before the start of term. If Levi didn't find the thought of a debut so ridiculous, he might have felt sorry for the longing in her voice. She was sacrificing a lot to find Alfero, assuming Alfero could even be found.
And if you don't find Lords before the summer ends?
Levi asked N quietly.
You're willing to risk that?
Of course I am. She's my mother. Levi's stomach tightened, and to his own surprise, he was about to say something consoling, but then she bit her lip. Maybe dealing cards made him hyper-aware of bluffing, but that was a straight-from-the-book tell. He wondered if she was hiding something after all, but he didn't press her on it, for now.
We're here,
he announced as they crossed the border from Iron Territory into Scarland. Tents, stands, and carts lined the sidewalks, and people crowded around them, waving merchandise in the air to tempt customers, or yelling at the kids trying to steal food and trinkets. Several paperboys approached him and N, advertising this week's copy of the Southside's Guillory Street Gossip, or the Northside's version, The Kiss and Tell. Levi grabbed N's shoulders and pushed her ahead. If she spent too long gawking at everything, a pickpocket would nab her in a blink.
"This is Scrap Market," he said. "It changes location every day, and it's in only one place for a few hours at a time, before it disappears."
She broke away from his grasp and glared at him with annoyance. "Are all your markets like this? How disorienting!"
"No, just this one. People here don't pay in vaults. They don't really have them. Instead, they trade. It changes time and place to make it harder for the white boots to find them. The goods here aren't all legal, and it's all under the table."
They passed a food stand, and Levi's stomach rumbled at the smell of sausages and sizzling bacon. He'd forgotten to eat breakfast. N must have been hungry as well, judging by the longing look she cast at the donut cart. "Illegal? Then why are we here?" she asked nervously.
"The Scarhands live under Scrap Market."
"The Scarhands?"
"One of the gangs."
She halted in the middle of the street. "You said your friend wasn't in a gang." Levi hauled her along, this time not letting her shrug him off. She was going to lose her purse.
"No, I said he wasn't an iron," he grunted.
Besides, Raymond Kitamura was a good place for them to start. Not only had Raymond introduced Levi to Lords, but he was the Scar Lord, and all secrets of new reigns flushed down to him eventually. "Let go of me! It's terribly impolite, not to mention improper.
I'm trying to keep you from getting your purse stolen. You've already lost your luggage. Want to lose your vaults too?"
Levi refused to suffer through this entire morning only for N to lose his reward. She stopped struggling, and he led her into a ramshackle building with a sign reading "Cheap Orbs" in metalwork. They slid between a couple examining a box of empty glass orbs.
"Those are real shoddy quality," Levi muttered. "Probably can't hold over 20 vaults without shattering."
He could make better blindfolded, not that he'd made orbs in years. His blood and split talents didn't mix together well, so he decided a long time ago to avoid orb-making altogether. N stared at a crate full of knives, each with a little rust on the handle or cracks in the blade. "How many street gangs are there?" Levi cleared his throat. Really, there was no person better suited for introducing N to new reigns than himself.
"There are three. The Irons, the Scarhands, and the Doves. They all live on the north side."
There were also the two casino families, the Augustines and the Torrens. But Levi didn't want to overwhelm her. Besides, he'd rather not think about the families right now. It was a mistake involving himself with either of them. "Why do you call yourselves the Irons?" N asked.
"It's a nickname. We didn't have a name at first. The Dens just called us Mechanics. People who fix games."
He shook his head.
"Of course, our clients didn't actually like to call us that. Bad for business. Somehow the name Irons caught on."
"So you cheat," she said, the contempt obvious in her voice.
We make a business out of winning.
Levi took her to a door in the back of the shop. A rusted lock dangled from the knob. Although Levi never used his blood talent anymore for its actual purpose, making orbs, he often relied on his skill for fire. Levi could do a few tricks, light a match with the snap of his fingers, walk through open flame without being burned, craft a glass ornament with only his bare hands. Nothing powerful, but his talent was often useful. Levi grabbed the lock and concentrated on heat. After a few moments, it glowed red and hissed with steam.
How are you doing that? She asked.
It's my blood talent.
He tugged it and it snapped. He would have thought that obvious, given the orb-maker colors in his hair.
Which is...
Someone will hear you.
He didn't need the Scar Lord blaming him for giving away today's location to all of Scrap Market. Raymond liked to lie low. Levi slipped inside the crack of the door, into a dark, narrow staircase. When N closed it behind them, everything went black.
You'd better leave. We're not seeing anyone today, someone growled.
N made a sound somewhere between clearing her throat and a squeak.
It's me, Levi said. Pup?
He hated that nickname. People assumed that Kane smelled auras like bloodhounds, even though they read them with all their senses. The nickname was, in Levi's opinion, the embodiment of everything he needed to change about his reputation. Once upon a time, the Irons had been the richest gang in the city. Even if he was young, Levi deserved to be taken seriously.
Nice to see you again, Jonas, Levi lied.
Jonas Maccabees, the Scarhand's second-in-command, sneered.
You should stick to Old Town where you belong. That's a shame, because I came here to see you. It's hard to resist that smile of yours.
Jonas turned on a light, and Levi squinted as his eyes adjusted. The room had concrete walls and a mess of exposed, leaking pipes. It smelled faintly of cigarettes.
Raymond isn't seeing anyone today, Jonas grunted.
A scar ran from his left eye down his cheek, disappearing beneath his shoulder-length black hair. More scars crisscrossed his palms, and his skin had a grey tint to it, like a corpse. Beside Levi, N stiffened.
But he'll see me, Levi challenged.
Jonas glared because he knew Levi was right, then mumbled something under his breath and turned to a door at the other end of the room. The undeniable stench of rotting bodies trailed after him.
Is Raymond their boss? N whispered.
He's the Scar Lord.
You failed to mention that.
Does it matter? I'm the Iron Lord, aren't I?
Apparently his lordly title didn't warrant the same concern.
Maybe this was a bad...
Do you want to find Alfera or not?
She quieted. Jonas opened the door and ushered them into an office. Raymond perched on the desk. He was short and slender, to the point of looking starved, with black hair and brown hooded eyes. He wore a shiny gold vest and a crimson jacket, a belt of reptile scales and huge rings on every finger, which made 8 rings in total. Both his middle fingers were stumps.
He brought a missy, Jonas said. Yes,
Raymond answered, scanning N up and down with interest. Levi didn't usually introduce missies to his friends.
I can see that.
Levi pulled up a seat at the desk and nodded for N to do so as well. As he sat, he got a whiff of Raymond's cheap cologne and nearly gagged.
We won't take long, Raymond said, dismissing Jonas,
who closed the door as he left. Then he held out his hand to N.
I'm Raymond Kitamura, he said.
She shook it and gave a winning smile to rival Levi's own. All of her apprehension from before was concealed.
It's a pleasure. My name is N. Salter.
You don't dress like any Salter I've ever met, he remarked,
which made N lift her chin indignantly. Levi snorted, picturing N in a burlesque costume. Well, it wasn't so terrible a picture, if he was being honest with himself.
Or any of Levi's boys or missies, for that matter, Raymond added, smirking at Levi.
He shrugged in response. Levi had a long romantic history of scattered affairs, a few girls and many boys, that had become the subject of teasing from his friends. They claimed he had a hopeless habit of kissing and telling.
"I'm not his missy," En said hurriedly.
"Good. Glad to hear you got taste," Raymond joked.
Aside from the dons of the casino families, Raymond Kitamura was arguably the most powerful person in the North Side, a reputation he enjoyed flaunting in Levi's face at every opportunity. When Levi had first arrived in New Raines, 12 years old, scrappy and eager, Raymond had taken him in. The two were like brothers, though, as Jack had pointed out on more than one occasion, they fought more often than they got along. 2 Octobers ago, when Bianca Augustine had dumped the investment scheme on him, Levi had turned to Raymond as a business partner. Since then, Levi had tried to keep their working relationship under wraps. But Chez had discovered it several months ago. His third considered it a betrayal. Officially, the Irons and the Scarhans were far from friends, and the gangs took their rivalry seriously. So Levi visited Raymond only when it was absolutely necessary these days, even if he sometimes missed their squabbles. Raymond pulled a cigar out of his pocket. He pointed it at Levi, almost like he was offering it to him, except he wasn't. Levi snapped his fingers, igniting a small flame at his fingertips, and lit the end. Raymond cupped it and took a deep inhale. The smoke billowed out his nostrils, and En crinkled her nose.
"We're still late on the Torren payment," Raymond reminded him, as if Levi needed reminding. 2 weeks or so." "Let's talk about this another time," Levi muttered.
En already knew he ran a gang. He didn't want her knowing about the scam, too. He couldn't have her running off on him, at least not until she paid him tonight. And if Raymond did have any leads on Alfaro, then it was in Levi's best interest to stick with En. He couldn't lose the potential for a 10,000-volt reward for finding her mother, even if the chances were slim.
"Now seems fine to me."
Raymond blew out a cloud of smoke, and Levi seriously considered the repercussions of wringing his skinny neck. Clearly he'd caught his friend in a bad mood.
"And the white boot captain?"
Levi debated with himself for a moment, then decided that, after being chased just this morning, En was unlikely to talk to anyone about this conversation. She didn't know anyone in the city except for him. Still, they needed to be discreet.
"I paid the captain this morning," Levi answered begrudgingly. "But he knew. He knew about the scam."
Raymond's eyes widened.
"Did he tell anyone?" "I don't think so. But he said some things about Cedric Torren that have me concerned."
Raymond anxiously tapped the soot off his cigar.
"You talked to Bianca yet?"
Powerful as Raymond was, the only person who could truly protect Levi from Cedric was Bianca, the donor of the Augustine family, the owner of the St. Morse Casino, and, as far as Levi was concerned, the foulest woman in New Raines.
"Not yet. I'm not sure what she'll do to help."
St. Morse was a sinking ship. Bianca's radical political beliefs made her unpopular on the South Side, where many of her patrons lived. Meanwhile, the Torren family had the wigheads in their pockets.
"You're Bianca's favorite. She'd do anything for you," Raymond said, blowing out another exhale of smoke. "You're her bitch."
Levi's fury simmered as Raymond smirked.
"We're not here to talk about this," Levi snapped.
He wanted to add that En and Alfera's vaults might have been the solution to their problem, but he couldn't think of a way to say that without En picking up on it. He'd have to discuss that with Raymond another time. But he already knew what Raymond would say. "Alfaro is dead, Levi. Of course she's dead. You're too easily persuaded by a pretty missy."
"But I want to talk about business," Raymond insisted. "Ever since Bianca lost our thousands of safety vaults, this is starting to sound a lot more dangerous. I have skin in this game, too. If you want to pitch in more, partner, no can do. 15% was the deal."
Raymond flicked his ashes in a porcelain bowl that was broken on one side.
"No can do."
"Are you both quite done?" En snapped. "It's very inconsiderate to talk business in front of a stranger."
Raymond snorted and picked at his well-manicured cuticles. He took precise care of the fingers he had left, and never liked to get his hands dirty.
She's a real charmer, pup.
I'm afraid I didn't come here to charm you, she snapped. I came here in search of information on Lord Zalfero. Raymond paused.
Did you now?
Despite N's numerous flaws, namely that she was mucking annoying, she knew how to weasel in and out of a conversation. Levi respected that.
Have you heard anything about Zalfero lately?
Levi asked Raymond, more than eager to steer the discussion away from their failing con.
She comes and goes, he answered. The usual spots. But I haven't heard anything noteworthy recently. What do you need to know?
N's face lit brighter than a neon sign outside of Luckluster Casino. I need to find her. She's missing.
How do you know her? You don't look like the type to read monarchist papers.
You can tell this just from looking at me. The Scarhands worked in the business of counterfeiting, arms dealing, and information, and Raymond had sacrificed 10 years, dozens of men, and 2 fingers to carve out his gang's place in the North Side. Raymond credited his power to his blood talent. He could see through any lie. But he probably didn't need to guess that the dare in N's words was empty.
Most of the pseudonyms are dead, Raymond said flatly. Lord Zalfero is smart. She survived this long. If she's missing, though...
Please, where was she last seen? N's voice quivered.
She frequented the Sauterelle. It's a cabaret a few blocks off Sweetie Street. There, they'd probably know her as Seance, her pen name.
N paled at the mention of Sweetie Street.
Are you sure?
Levi and I both have friends there. We can get you in.
Levi nodded. Mansi worked at the Sauterelle.
My shift is this evening, but tomorrow we'll pay a visit, he said.
This was perfect. With the promise of a lead tomorrow, N would need to stay with Levi and pay him tonight. He doubted she would attempt to brave Sweetie Street by herself. And if he could promise her this night, then the next, maybe they really could find Lords. Maybe she was the answer to all of his problems. He just needed Lords to be alive. And he needed N to stay.
What's wrong?
Raymond smirked, seeing N crinkle her nose.
Got a problem with variety shows, dollface.
N shook her head.
No.
Raymond tilted his head to the side.
That's not it. It's that you're afraid Lords is probably dead.
Raymond had many good qualities, but no one would call him considerate. He didn't hold back any blows.
You know, you still never mentioned how you knew Alfaro.
Raymond was already using past tense. Anne's face was pale as she rose from her seat in a rush. Thank you, but I need some air. She nearly tripped on her dash to the door. Levi stood hurriedly and followed her. He didn't like Anne much, but even he admitted that Raymond's words were harsh, considering the morning she'd already had. Anne pushed through the back room and up the stairwell. By the time they exited the orb shop, tears glinted in her brown eyes. Outside, the wind had picked up, and the clouds, black from factory smoke and an oncoming storm, cast a shadow over the city. The tents were gone, carts gone, stands gone. Scrap market had picked up and left, and Anne and Levi were the only ones standing on the empty street.
Is she really dead?
Anne asked, her voice high and broken in a way that stirred his own memories. For a moment, Levi was 11 years old again, kneeling at his mother's sickbed. He swallowed.
Don't,
he warned. She didn't listen. She let out a gasp, then a sob. Levi stepped back from her, unsure what to do or how to comfort. Tears pooled down her cheeks, and she blotted them away with the back of her hand.
I don't know if she's alive,
he said truthfully but gently.
But I'd feel it. I'd know if she was dead.
If Jack were here, he would have agreed with N. Jack was sentimental like that. Levi was usually too cynical to indulge such hopes, but this one time he needed to believe. He needed N's reward.
I need her to stay,
But it was also something more than that. He recognized his own ghosts in N's eyes. He put a hand on N's shoulder and bent down to her level.
Look at me. We can't talk here, in the middle of the street for the whole world to hear. You know that, and you know why, don't you?
N nodded, her hand fiddling in her coat pocket. Even with her limited knowledge of new reigns, she understood why the monarchists were a dangerous subject.
I have a shift tonight at St. Morse Casino, so I'm going to take you there now.
Levi swallowed hard, hoping he wouldn't regret his next words.
But I promise, I'll help you find your mother, no matter what.
N. Levi and N passed through the revolving doors of St. Morse Casino. N had never set foot in a casino before, but she'd glimpsed some of the smaller establishments on Trop Street, and none of them came close to resembling St. Morse's old-world glamour. A crystal chandelier stretched across the entire ceiling. Emerald green carpeting trailed up the stairs, matching the velvet curtains draped over the windows and the uniforms of the concierges. Metallic silver archways led into rooms labelled Trop's Room, Theatre and Ballroom, with sapphire blue calligraphy. Everything smelled of fine leather and whiskey, and each patron donned the Republic's most famous designers, Gersten, Lani Maxarello, Regalier. It was, without a doubt, the gaudiest place to ever affront N's senses. At least 50 guests mingled in the lobby, champagne glasses in hand. They wore elegant tea gowns with pleated skirts, feathered hats and long strands of black pearls. In her tailored suit and scuffed heels, N felt exposed in more ways than one. She'd lied to Levi about the vaults. At first she hadn't felt guilty in the least. Levi was a criminal after all. He probably cheated tourists like her every day. But that didn't make it right. And after what he'd said to her earlier, like he had more at stake in this than his wallet, it didn't make her feel good either. It hadn't been a total lie. The vaults did exist. Last summer, when N had sneaked into Lord's private office for the first and only time, she'd seen the bank slips. She and her mother certainly didn't live like they had millions of vaults, but N had read the documents herself. It was wealth beyond imagination, and Lord's had kept it from her. So the vaults did exist, and paying Levi would hardly put a dent in their fortune. But N had no idea where the bank account was, or where the vaults came from. It didn't matter. Once she found Lord's, she'd have her answers. Once she found Lord's, Levi would have his vaults. It wasn't a lie, it just wasn't the truth. She and Levi walked into a hallway lined with portraits of men, women, and occasionally whole families, each with blazing purple eyes. Misers, N thought with a chill. She wondered whether or not it was dangerous for the casino to have portraits of the royal families on display, as if they were people to be revered. Most people alive today had witnessed the revolution, and however corrupt the Republic might have been, it was nothing compared to the tyranny of the misers. The deeper they ventured into St. Morse, the more N felt like she was walking into a castle out of a history book. The mahogany woodwork, the blue and green everywhere, the white stone walls. A hotel casino, Levi called it. Really, it was more of a fortress. In the nighttime, it might even resemble a mausoleum. They stopped in front of an elevator, where Levi pulled a lever that illuminated an up arrow above the doors.
How many vaults did you bring? Levi asked. Enough to last until you leave.
No, not with all of my belongings gone. A jolt of panic shot through her. She had no clothes, no toiletries, and not enough vaults to replace them and still purchase her ticket home after paying Levi tonight.
That's what I thought, he said.
The elevator doors opened, and they stepped onto a shaky metal platform. The black iron gates creaked closed as the operator turned a crank.
How are you with heights? This is the tallest building in the north side.
I'm all right, she lied. The floor shifted beneath her feet, almost like the deck of the ship she'd travelled on to New Reigns. But then, she hadn't been terrified of falling to her death. N held her breath and squeezed the railing. Levi watched her with amusement, much as he had all morning. At first, when Levi had tried to steal from her, Anne had considered him a crook. But after they left Scrap Market, there had been an unmistakable sincerity in his voice. It had improved her opinion of him, if only slightly. Still, he was terribly rude. She reminded herself that she needed to tolerate him only until they found her mother.
"Never ridden in an elevator before?" he asked.
"Not one quite so in need of maintenance," the operator grunted. The doors opened to a hallway with emerald wallpaper and silver trim. It looked opulent and grand, but beneath, Anne could see that it was royal only in the cheapest, most obscene manner possible. Every metallic finish was paint. Every bit of crystal was actually glass.
"The top floor is only for Bianca Augustine's favorites," Levi said,
except with more disgust than pride.
"This includes the highest-paying guests, close friends of the Augustines, Bianca herself, and, of course, me."
"You mentioned Bianca earlier. Who is she?" Anne asked. He scowled like he had a bad taste in his mouth.
"You should pay better attention to that guidebook. Bianca is the donna of the Augustine crime family, and she owns St. Mawes Casino."
As Anne digested his words, Levi led her to a room labeled 2018 and unlocked the door. He held it open for her, but she couldn't tell whether his politeness was meant to mock. It was impossible to differentiate between his smirk and his smile. The apartment was unnaturally clean. Levi took a seat on the stiff armchair in the living room, while Anne examined the shine of his countertops and the strange black oven that looked out of place in his cramped kitchen. Bookshelves covered every wall, filled with volumes and papers arranged by height, and a glass conch shell glittered on the coffee table. Anne took a seat on the couch.
"What?" Levi asked, studying her face. "Missies always expect that I live in a gutter," he muttered.
Then, as though he were actually going to play host, he offered her a green candy from the bowl on his table.
"Tiggy's saltwater taffy. Absinthe-flavored. It's a signature New Rains treat."
Anne shook her head, certain anything signature to this city would prove repulsive. "Why are we here?" She'd never been alone in a young man's home before, and she hoped he couldn't see her cheeks redden, couldn't tell what she was thinking. Surely there must have been other places in St. Mawes to talk in private, besides his apartment. The whole ordeal of Sweetie Street and the unfamiliarity with New Rains didn't ease Anne's mind, nor did the pleasing slopes and angles of Levi's jawline.
"I'm gonna get you a job," he declared.
She startled. "A job? Here?"
"What? Too below you to earn an income?"
She doubted her teachers at finishing school would have approved of a lady working at a casino, or a lady working at all for that matter. "What kind of job do you have in mind?" she asked coolly, refusing to rise to his provocation.
"You're a dancer. We've got several groups of performers."
"I'm not that type of dancer."
"And St. Mawes isn't that type of establishment."
He stood and turned into a narrow hallway, motioning for her to follow. By the time she got up, he disappeared into the room at the end, and she realized with no small amount of horror that it must have been his bedroom.
"What are you doing?"
Anne called from the doorway, unable to even peek inside.
"Finding you something to wear. Your clothes belong in an antique shop."
Anne sniffed in indignation. Her outfit was considered fashionable in Bellamy, where women had a sense of modesty.
"What do you expect me to wear?" she asked. "Trousers?"
Or worse, one of those fishnet numbers she'd seen all over Trop Street. He emerged with a dress and an easy smile.
"What? Don't you trust me?"
"Hardly. And certainly not with that gleam in his eyes. Or with the not entirely unpleasant smell of his citrus cologne." She allowed herself to admit that Levi Glazier was very good-looking, at least in an up-to-no-good way that she supposed some people found attractive. He was of fairly average height, but his build was slender and trim. Of all his noteworthy features, his smooth brown skin, the sharp slopes of his cheekbones, the most identifiable was his hair. It started bronze at the roots, but the tight curls gradually turned to black at the ends, as if singed. Sometimes talents, especially talents of mysteries, carried a particular physical characteristic with them, like the purple eyes of the misers. She remembered Levi melting the lock earlier and lighting Raymond's cigar. He might have had a fire-making talent, but the firemakers she'd met in the past were different. They smelled of smoke and depleted the oxygen from the air around them, suffocating anyone in close contact. He didn't smell like... Levi smirked, and then realized with a start that she'd been staring. To avoid his gaze, she spent several moments examining the dress. It was floor length, with a gold ribbon trim lining the silky, sage-colored fabric. It was actually rather nice. "Where did you get this?" she asked as she daringly entered his room and took it from his hands.
"I've got a collection of lost things."
"Lost things?" Oh, he meant left behind. She lifted the dress up to hide her mortified expression.
"You get dressed," he said. "I'll be out here."
"Levi," she protested as he walked away. "This is ridiculous and unnecessary. My clothes are perfectly fine." Although as she looked down, she noticed that her hemline was rather filthy.
"Look, Missy," Levi said flatly. "You can call as much attention to yourself as you want, but I prefer to keep my head down. Time to fit into our society."
He closed the door but kept talking, his voice diminishing.
"Now get changed. I've things to do and only time for half of them."
Humph. Though her attire did stand out in the city, it was for the right reasons. But the dress he'd chosen didn't appear too outrageous, and the color would suit her nicely. As she changed, she realized how low the neckline was cut. Goodness, she thought. It would be almost like strutting around topless. She turned to his wardrobe and rooted around for a new outfit. Nudged between another blouse and several pairs of men's undershirts in various sizes, this was quite the collection. She selected a red dress with a more conservative front. When Anne returned to the sitting room, she found Levi in the armchair, turning the glass conch shell over, like an archaeologist examining a fossil. He raised his eyebrows upon seeing her in a different dress. "Where did you buy it?" she asked, referring to the conch. "It's beautiful."
"I made it. There was a shell like this in my house when I was young, so I tried to replicate it."
"You have a glass-making talent?"
"No, an orb-making talent. But I don't use it much."
He talked with a kind of bitterness, as if admitting to something shameful. The orb-making talent certainly explained his hair and his affinity for fire. She'd never met an orb-maker, but she should have guessed it before. They had nearly as much lore surrounding them as the misers did. Most of them were even executed alongside the misers, so there weren't many families left. "Then why be a card dealer and a..." She didn't say criminal in case she might offend him, though Levi seemed to take pride in his particular line of work. "Orb makers could make a very fair living."
"You mean, why be poor when I could be rich?"
He laughed hollowly.
"For plenty of reasons. For one, most people assume orb makers are miser sympathizers, and I'd rather not associate myself with that muck. The only reason my family survived was because we haven't called attention to ourselves."
En flinched at miser sympathizers and survived. She didn't like how, in only one morning, New Rains had drawn a heavy black line connecting those two phrases to her mother, followed by a blood-red question mark. For the second time that day, En wondered how she would face it if she never learned the truth about Lord's other life. The newspapers, the monarchists, the miser sympathizers. It was so far from what she knew about Lord's. But what did she know about her mother? Lords had taught her how to analyze people meticulously. She had a method to this, and a set of rules that she observed with an almost religious reverence. En could replicate her skills in a heartbeat. But they never worked on Lords. It began with a person's air. Lords was tall, with features full of right angles and fair colors. She dressed fluidly, a practice uncommon but not unheard of in Bellamy,
where reputation depended on social circles and income and nothing else. Her protector talents, her blood and split talents were the same, making her exceptionally powerful. Made her every word sound consoling, soothing, no matter how sharp her tone. She followed each code of societal etiquette, but did so with such precision that it always seemed as if she were poking fun. Next was what you could have gathered from pleasant small talk. Lords claimed she was 37 years old, but she looked no more than 30. Her family, now all dead as far as N knew, had vacationed in Bellamy when she was young, but she hadn't moved there until she'd adopted N, and no one in Bellamy knew her from her childhood. Last were the more intimate details. Within the privacy of their home, Lords cursed. She read New Rain's newspapers. She sang loudly and terribly. N had seen strange scars shaped like perfect circles on the inside of her elbows. She'd heard her laugh too hard or yell in a way that made the beads on their chandelier quiver. But she'd never seen Lords shed a tear. She'd seen Lords walk into her office each morning with a cup of coffee and lock the door behind her. And N, for years, had been too nervous to follow her inside. N loved her, but she didn't understand her. No one in Bellamy did. It was why their names rarely graced the guest lists of balls and salons. Why no one ever paid attention to N. Now N wanted to understand, and she regretted more than anything avoiding these questions before. "I want to hear everything," N told Levi seriously. "Everything you know about the monarchists, the miser sympathizers, this world. Lords never shared any of this with me, and I need to..."
"Have you ever considered that your mother purposely kept you in the dark?"
he asked. Not unkindly, but not gently either. "Yes," she thought. Instead, she answered, "Why would she do that?"
"No idea. But before we chat with Bianca Augustine about hiring you, it's very important that we're on the same page. If you haven't noticed by the decor of this casino, Bianca has a fetish for all things miser. She certainly knows who Lords is, but," he said loudly as N began to interrupt, "under no circumstances should you ask Bianca about Lords. Under no circumstances should you ask Bianca anything."
The way Levi spat out Bianca's name, N wondered what exactly he'd asked of Bianca, or what she'd asked of him.
"Misers created vaults. That was their talent," he began.
"I know that," he shushed her.
"Being an orb maker, I was taught a lot about misers. I'm sure I know more than you. We're different from the metalsmiths or glassmaker families. As you might know, misers don't technically make vaults. They make energy. Orb makers filter that energy into vaults, sort of like a byproduct. Without orb makers, no one would have ever started using vaults as money. Without orb makers, holding that energy in your skin would be unbearably painful."
N was tempted to interrupt and remind him that very few people stored vaults in their skin. In Bellamy, it was considered too lowbrow not to use orbs. They weren't that expensive. And in New Rain, she imagined such a method could prove risky. With enough practice, someone could steal your vaults with only a graze of your skin. Forgoing orbs was impractical.
"The misers were all systematically murdered during the revolution. Adults and children alike," Levi said gravely. "There were protests, of course, but the Phoenix Club didn't much care. 25 years ago sounds like a long time, but not for the North Side. Misers are still a political topic, but we don't need them anymore now that vaults can be manufactured artificially. Still, the monarchists have been slowly gaining momentum to fight against corruption."
"Do you agree with the monarchists?" N asked quietly. Levi almost made it sound like the monarchists were in the right, when all N had ever associated them with was extremism and violence. He smiled in a way that wasn't much of a smile at all.
"I don't involve myself in politics."
Seeking reassurance, N took her token out of her pocket. It had always seemed like a unique trinket, something pretty Lords had thought N might like. Now N saw the woman in the cameo as a miser queen. She saw the revolution, the queen's execution, the murder of every miser and their sympathizers. She couldn't decide which was more horrific, that Lords had gifted her an object with such a blood-soaked history, or that N had treated it as a trinket. I still... She squeezed the token, and it felt warm and steady in her palm. It was her only comfort away from home, alone in this city. I still can't picture Lords being involved with monarchists.
She was more than involved. She was Seance, practically the face of the Miser Sympathizer's crusade.
He gazed at N fiercely, the judgment clear in his dark eyes. What exactly did Levi Glazier think of her? That she was desperate, foolish, childish? She wondered why she cared.
Why did you think she came to New Rain so often?
She said she was visiting friends, N answered.
She never thought to bring you to meet those friends.
It was more important I stay in school.
You never questioned that.
She squeezed the token in her fist. Was this some kind of interrogation? She's my mother. Why should I have questioned her? Although N had certainly had her suspicions, she'd ignored them. Admittedly, there had once been a time when N resented Lords for her secrets, for her strange behavior, for the way she alienated N from any chance of society's approval. But now, with Lords' whereabouts and even survival unknown, she hated herself for those thoughts.
It's easy for protectors to keep secrets, Levi prodded. They never seem as if they're lying. It never occurred to you.
No, it didn't! N's voice rose, marking the dozenth time she'd broken the show-no-emotion rule. She didn't appreciate what Levi was suggesting, that Lords would use her talents to purposefully keep N in the dark. If a protector officially swore their powers to someone, they were forever bound to act in that person's best interest, no matter the implications for themselves. Lords had never sworn to anyone, thank goodness. The practice was barbaric and unused since the revolution. Levi was suggesting Lords was protecting someone, probably someone in New Reigns, and, by extension, that N hadn't even noticed that her mother's life was barely her own.
I trust her, N snapped.
What did he want her to say? That yes, it had occurred to her that Lords had purposefully kept information from her? Of course it had. N knew Lords kept secrets, but he made it sound as if their entire relationship was a lie, and N would never believe that.
I trust her. Maybe trust is a foreign concept to you.
She realized, once she said it, that the words had come out rather harsh. This whole time Levi had kept a remarkably cool expression. She was the one working herself up. For a moment she considered apologizing. Then,
maybe naivete is a foreign concept to you, he said dryly.
That thought vanished.
How dare... If you're so jumpy answering my questions, how are you going to last one night in the North Side? How are you going to face Bianca Augustine?
He shook his head, and N couldn't decide if she felt ashamed or aggravated. He wasn't being fair.
I'm just trying to keep you from getting yourself killed.
What do you mean? She asked. It wasn't as though she was in any real danger. At least as long as she didn't speak to any white boots again. He leaned forward and steepled his fingers, his expression grim.
Have you ever heard of the Phoenix Club?
Only now, when you just mentioned it, she answered.
They're the most powerful and dangerous people in the Republic. Businessmen, wigheads, scholars. All with a talent for immorality. They're the ones who orchestrated the Miser executions. The whole revolution, even.
She searched his expression for one of his telltale smirks, but found none. There's no talent for immorality, she said. That's impossible. He sighed, cracked his neck and checked his watch. N's nostrils flared. If anyone had a right to feel impatient, it was she.
Chancellor Semper himself is part of the Phoenix Club. He's their leader.
She barked out a laugh.
You expect me to believe that?
Levi stood.
Fine, missy. I was trying to prepare you, but if you're so sure of yourself, you're obviously ready for Bianca.
He walked to his front door and motioned for her to follow. N hesitated, wanting to challenge him. But if she kept arguing, she might start crying again. The urge to do so throbbed in her chest.
and if she even used enough breath to say fine, it would explode. She'd already cried twice this morning. She didn't know how she had enough tears left for a third. They were silent until the elevator reached the bottom floor.